And so the Suda went on, and he served more things, and he started singing and making l'chaim, and it was a gansa over there, a gansa party, a gansa simcha. And after the party, everybody went home, and the man who had gotten the hard-boiled egg also went home, and he forgot all about the hard-boiled egg and paying back to the other man sitting next to him. He forgot all about it. 1 year went by, 2 years went by, 5 years went by, and 10 years went by. 10 years go by. And one day, the man is walking down the street in Yerushalayim, and there comes up another man to him, and he says, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem, I recognize you. Maybe you forgot about it, but you owe me some money." The man says to the man who just said he owes him money, "Excuse me, I owe you money? I don't know who you are, and I don't remember ever borrowing money from you." And the man says, "No, you never really borrowed money, but you do owe me money. If you remember, a long time ago, 10 years ago, we were at a party together. We were sitting next to each other. And you had eaten your hard-boiled egg, and you had an empty plate, and I had two hard-boiled eggs on my plate, and so you asked me for my extra hard-boiled egg, and you said that you will pay me back whatever the egg is worth on the day that you remember. Well, it seems you forgot for 10 years. So today is the day you're remembering, because I'm reminding you. And so today you have to pay me what the egg is worth." Oh, the man says, "Yes, I remember, yes. Oh, yes, of course. Well, how much should I pay you? I'm going to go find out how much an egg is worth." He goes over where they're selling eggs in the marketplace, and by that time, they were 25 cents. Time had gone on. The price of eggs had gone up 25 cents. He came back to the man, and he reaches in his pocket. He says, "Look, I'm going to pay you 25 cents. Here you go." And the man says, oh no, not 25 cents. And the other man says, "Well, what do you mean? The price of eggs today is 25 cents. And this is the day I remembered to pay you back. And I told you, I will pay you back the worth of the egg on the day that I remembered to pay you back. Isn't that what I told you?" And the other man says, "That's exactly what you told me. And you know how much you owe me for that egg? You owe me $1 million. "What? $1 million for an egg? One egg? How could that be? I mean, an egg goes up from a dime to 15 cents to 20 cents, now it's 25 cents. What are you talking about? $1 million? And the other man says, "Look, this was 10 years ago. What could have happened to that egg over 10 years? We're talking about what the egg is worth, and this egg started 10 years ago. What happens from an egg? Okay, what is an egg worth over 10 years? You take an egg, it comes out from the egg, over time, a chicken. An egg becomes a chicken. Well, time goes on. You still didn't pay me back, so time is going on. The chicken grows up, and the chicken lays eggs. Now there's a lot of eggs. From those eggs come more chickens. Ooh, you got a lot of chickens now. And now all of those chickens are laying eggs. And then those eggs grow up to be chickens. And as time goes on, over a year, you've got hundreds of chickens laying hundreds of eggs. And over a couple years, you've got thousands of chickens laying thousands of eggs. And over 10 years, if you would figure out how many chickens and how many eggs would come out of that one egg over 10 years, you would have so many chickens and so many eggs, it would be worth $1 million. So don't tell me you're paying me 25 cents for an egg, because over 10 years, that egg is worth $1 million. Well, they started to argue, and they saw that they were getting nowhere because each one held what he held. And they decided they have to go now to the judge. They went to a regular judge. The judge heard the case. And the judge says, this is a very hard case, because it seems that from the words that the man said, he's right. He owes what the egg could have been over 10 years. But I'm not sure. And so this is one of those special cases that has to go to the king himself to judge it. Because the very most difficult cases that the regular judges couldn't figure out, they go to the king himself. And in those days, Kinelach, the king was David HaMelech. David HaMelech was the king. And now the two men go for judgment in front of David HaMelech. And they go in front of the king sitting on his throne. And there were certain officers together with the king, as he was going to hear the Shaila and tell what the answer is. And also in the room was a little boy, and his name was Shlomi. Later on, this little boy, who was the son of David, grew up to be Shlomi HaMelech. At that time, he was just a little boy, a young boy. He must have been pretty young, because you know how old Shlomi was when he actually became the king? He was 12 years old when he became the king. And this is before he became the king. So it was before he was even bar mitzvah. And so Shlomi HaMelech is also in the room. He loved to listen when his tati, Paskin Shailas, he loved to listen to the chokhmah and all of the wisdom and the smartness that goes into figuring out the hard Shailas. And this is the way Shlomi also became very, very smart, by listening to all these things and the way his father figured it out. And so the two men told the whole case, as you already know, to David HaMelech. And David HaMelech listened very, very closely to the two men and exactly what happened and exactly the words that were said. And the king paskined that the man that took the egg, since he had said, I'm going to pay you what the egg is worth at the time that I remember, and since 10 years had gone by, he has to actually pay $1 million to the other man. And you can imagine how the man who had gotten the egg and forgotten to pay, and now he's got to pay $1 million for the egg, you can imagine how he felt. But this came from the king, and now he's got to go home and tell his wife that somehow they have to come up with $1 million to pay what he owes. As he's walking home through the streets of Yerushalayim, feeling very, very bad, but of course feeling that this is what he was told to do and this is what he must do, all of a sudden, he hears footsteps behind him, little footsteps, and he hears a little boy's voice. Excuse me, mister, could I talk to you for a minute, please? He turns around, and he sees little Shlomi, the son of David HaMelech. The little boy that was next to his father's throne while David had paskin the Shaila. And little Shlomi says to the man, I was there today when your case came in front of my father. Now, I was listening very closely exactly to what you told my father, and I listened to what my father told you to do. My father is the king, and he's also my father. I have the mitzvah of kibud av ve'eim. And I also have the mitzvah of kavod for the melech, for the king. I cannot tell my father he's wrong. But I think that if my father would think over a certain thing in the case, if he would think into one thing that you told him, he might say differently. And only he can change the case and change the outcome that he said. And it's not too late. And the man said to little Shlomi, so what can I do? What can I do? I can't go back, can I? He says, no. But I'll tell you exactly what you can do. You might not understand when I tell you this exactly how it's going to work out for you. But if you do exactly what I say, I think that things are going to change for you and you're not going to have to pay the $1 million. Now listen very closely. And the man was very excited and he was listening to little Shlomi, the little boy. And Shlomi says to him, go home. On the way home, stop in the marketplace and buy some peas. Fine. Ask your wife to cook the peas. And after the peas are cooked, you will put the peas in a bag. Cooked peas in a bag. Don't eat them. Tomorrow, around noontime, around 12 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a certain field outside of Yerushalayim on the road. Go out to that field with the bag of cooked peas and wait there until my father will pass by in his royal wagon. Because tomorrow I know my father is going on a trip in his royal wagon on that road that goes out of Yerushalayim. Now, you will be standing in the field next to the road. When you see the wagon coming close, start planting the peas, the cooked peas, in the ground. And watch what's going to happen. Because my father is interested in every Jew and everybody, and he sees what they do. And if something is going to bother him, even though he's the king and he's in his royal wagon going somewhere, he will never stop. I'm sorry. He will stop even to ask a question from one Jew as to what he's doing. And you're going to see what's going to happen. I'm not going to explain anymore. You're going to see. Okay. This is what the man did. He went home. He bought the peas. His wife cooked the peas. He put them in a bag. The next day, he went over to that field. He was waiting there. As soon as the royal wagon was coming, as he saw it coming, he started planting in the ground the peas. David was sitting in his wagon, and he looked into the field, and he saw this man planting. And David told his officer, wait a minute. It is not the time of planting. You know, there's certain times of the year in the field. There's a planting time in the field. There's a time that the plants grow, and it's cutting down time. Nobody plants this time of year. It's not the time that anybody plants anything in their fields. Why is this man planting? Of course, David was worried about what a Jew is doing. Why is he planting in a time that nobody plants in their fields? So he said to his officer, call this man over. I want to ask him. Now, one thing I forgot to tell you that's very important. Shlomi did tell the man something to say to David when he would be called over to the wagon. Shlomi knew that he would be called over to the wagon, and Shlomi told him what to say, as you're going to see. Okay. So the officer goes over to the man who's planting, and he says, excuse me, the king, David HaMelech, wants to see you by his wagon. The man goes over there to the wagon, and the king says, excuse me, but why are you planting in a time that it's not for planting? And what are you planting? What do you think is going to grow now in a time that is not a time for planting in the field? The man says, well, I'm planting cooked peas. The king says, what? You're planting cooked peas? Cooked peas, what do you mean? Nothing grows from cooked peas. If you have a raw pea, it's like a seed. Raw peas you can put in the ground and something will grow out from them. But once it's cooked, nothing will grow. So why are you cooking? Why are you planting cooked peas? And the man said to the king, and this is what Shlomi had said for him to say. He says, look, if the king says that from a hard-boiled egg could come out of from a chicken, which a hard-boiled egg is a cooked egg, of course, if from a hard-boiled egg can come out of a chicken, so I figured from cooked peas can come out plants. You understand? If from a hard-boiled egg can come out a chicken, even though the egg is cooked, can grow out a chicken, so I figured from cooked peas can also grow out a plant. The king said, where do you get the idea that from a hard-boiled egg can come out a chicken? And the man said to the king, king, yesterday I came in front of you in judgment, and I had bought a hard-boiled egg from a man at a party, and I told him that whatever the egg will be worth at the time that I remember to pay him back, this is what I have to pay him back. And the king said that over 10 years, since so many chickens and so many eggs would come out of the egg, I have to pay him $1 million. And it was a hard-boiled egg. And the king says, oh yes, from a hard-boiled egg could not come out even one chicken. And could not come out more eggs and more chickens. That's right. I did not take in consideration that this was a hard-boiled egg. And so therefore, you only have to pay him what one regular egg is worth now, which is about 25 cents. How did you get the idea to show this to me? You've shown me a very, very important part of my judgment. And now my judgment, I have to say, has to be now, instead of your $1 million, you're paying only the 25 cents. But how did you figure out such a smart way to show me and a smart thing to say to me? Well, he says, the man, it wasn't my own thinking, but it was your son Shlomi. He came to me and he was very, very concerned about his kibud av and his kavod for you as the king. He didn't want to, chas v'shalom, say anything that would not be proper for him to say, but he told me to say this in order that he saw that the judgment should be this way. And the king was so excited and so proud of his son about his smartness and his chokhmah and his cleverness as just a little boy. And very, very fast this mice spread throughout Eretz Yisrael, and everyone saw how great was the smartness of little Shlomi even when he was a little boy before he was the king. Okay, one time there was a new king. He became the king of the palace. And the day that he became the king, he called everybody in the kingdom for his speech. The king makes a speech to tell everybody what he's going to do and what he wants and what the thing about him being the king is going to be. He's going to make the announcement of what he is going to do as the king. And he gathered everybody in the kingdom in front of the palace. He wanted everybody to hear. And nobody knew exactly what kind of a king this is going to be. He became the king, but nobody really knew who he was. Some people were nervous. And the king started to speak. He got up on his kingly platform, the special thing they built over there. He was wearing his crown and his robes. And he started screaming. He says, the first thing I'm going to do as the king is get rid of all the Jews. Every Jew in my kingdom is going to be either thrown out of my kingdom, or even worse than that, and he starts to speak against the Yidden. The first thing he says against the Yidden, this is a king who's against the Yidden. And he spoke very mean and screaming. And he expected that the Yidden that were there would, of course, be afraid of him. He was trying to make everybody afraid of him. He was trying to make everyone scared. And he looks down at the people. And all of a sudden he sees a Yid with a beard, with a yarmulke, with a hat, with tzitzis. He expected to see this Yid, you can imagine, crying because the king was trying to scare everybody. And he sees this Yid standing there, and the Yid is laughing. The Yid is laughing. And the king sees everybody else, other people, even non-Jews. They're afraid, they're shaking how terrifying the king is. And the Yid is laughing. Well, the king thought, maybe this Yid cannot hear me. Maybe I'm not speaking loud enough for him to be able to understand. And he starts screaming even louder, I'm getting rid of all the Jews. I'm going to throw out all the Jews and do worse to them, and this and that. And the Yid is holding his stomach, he's laughing even harder. He's laughing like it's the biggest joke in the world. And the king could not stand that this Yid is laughing at him. Because the king wanted to see the Yid cry. And the Yid is laughing like it's a joke. This made the king very angry. And his face turned red. And the more the king spoke, the harder the Yid laughed. Until the king couldn't stand it anymore and he called the Yid over. And in front of everyone, he told the Yid to come up and stand next to the king. And he tells the Yid, he asks the Yid, why are you laughing if I'm telling you I'm going against the Jews? And the Yid says to the king in a loud voice everybody could hear, he says, look, you're not the first king that went against Yidden. And I'll tell you why I'm laughing. A long time ago, there was a big king, bigger than you, more important than you, more powerful than you, and his name was Paroi. He was the king of Mitzrayim. He also tried to go against the Yidden. He tried to get rid of the Yidden. Now, what's left from Paroi? I'll tell you what's left from Paroi. What's left from Paroi is a yontif. It's called Pesach. We have a yontif. We say the Haggadah. We eat delicious matzahs. We have a whole Sudas Mitzvah. We have four cups of wine. We sing special songs. Everyone get dressed up beautiful. It's a beautiful yontif we have left from Paroi. This is what's left of Paroi, who tried to go against the Yidden. Even in the end, Paroi tried to go with his armies against the Yidden. We have another yontif, Shvi Shel Pesach, Acharon Shel Pesach, another yontif where he tried to go through the Yamsuf, and Paroi got destroyed in the Yamsuf. This is what's left of Paroi. Then there came another very, very shlechta king, with his Mishnah Melech, Achashverosh and Haman, especially Haman, big Rishayim, bigger than you. And they tried to go against the Yidden. Haman tried to get rid of the Yidden in one day, with Achashverosh's help, of course, he was the king. What's left of Haman? What's left of Achashverosh? I'll tell you, another yontif, a beautiful yontif called Purim, one of the happiest days of the whole year. And we have costumes, and we have shalach manas, and special mitzvahs, and a special suda, and simcha ad lo yada, and such a freilich and tog, and delicious things to eat, haman tashen. We drink wine. What's left from haman and Achashverosh? A yonta with delicious things to eat, a big freilich and tog. And then there was another king. His name was Antiochus, the king of the Yavanim. Also, he tries to go against the Yidden, just like you. He was a bigger king than you. He tries to do all kinds of things against the Yidden and make trouble in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis Hamikdash. What's left of Antiochus? We have another yontif. It's called Hanukkah. We have latkes. We play dreidlach, we light the menorah, we have all kinds of special things, and special davening, and special nigunim, and 8 days, and there's Hanukkah geld, and all kinds of fun things for the kinderlach. This is what's left over from Antiochus. So what am I laughing for? I'm just thinking. When Hashem gets through with you, when Hashem takes care of you, because anybody who starts up with the Yidden is like starting up with Hashem. And whoever starts up with a Yid, if he does good to a Yid, like it says in the Chumash, whoever gives a bracha to a Yid gets a bracha. But Chas v'Shalom, whoever starts up with a Yid and makes trouble, Hashem is going to get him. Hashem is going to punish him. So I'm just thinking to myself, when Hashem gets through with you for what you're trying to do the Yidden, I wonder what kind of a nice yantiv we're going to have to remember you, and I wonder what kind of geshmaka thing we're going to eat to remember you, and what kind of special things that we're going to do to remember you. Just like all the other Rishoyim that went against the Yidden, we have a yantiv and special delicious things and special fun things for the kinderlach. That's how we remember these people. So when Hashem gets through with you, I'm thinking to myself, oh, enough a yantiv, enough special things to eat, enough special things we're going to do to remember you. How many boys understand this mindset? If you look at it, whoever starts up with Eden in the end, what do we have from them? A yantif. We have a yantif. Now, even the sad days, for example, the 9 days, Tisha B'Av, where it's still sad, these are going to be changed over when Mashiach comes to be big Yamim Taivim. Just like you have 9 days of Sukkis with Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, those are the 9 days of Zman Simchasenu. So it says the 9 days in the summertime of the sad 9 days are going to be changed over to be even bigger Simcha days than the 9 days of Zman Simchasenu. It just didn't happen yet. And all the tiny ice, all the fast days that are still sad, when Mashiach comes, we just have to wait a little bit till Mashiach comes, and these are going to be changed over to be big Yomim Tovim. Okay, this is a story about Kibud Av, respecting a father, and also about respecting a Talmud Chacham, which is also a mitzvah. Now there was a father and a son, and they had a problem. Each one of them had a problem. The father was a very big Talmud Chacham, but the son was even a bigger Talmud Chacham. Now, a father, al pi din, has to stand up for his father. When the father comes in the room, al pi din, out of kibud av, you have to stand up for your father. Now, really, you should do that every time your father comes in the room. Only many times a tati is meichel, which means he says, you don't have to. So that's why, you know, sometimes get up for your father. When he comes in the room, your father says, don't, you know, it's okay. It's all right with me if you don't get up. Your father gives permission. Okay. Now, since the son was a Talmud Chacham, and he really respected his father, who was also a Talmud Chacham, and if a Talmud Chacham comes in the room, you also have to stand up. So the son always wanted to get up for the father, out of two reasons. One, kibud av, and two, because to give kavod for a Talmud Chacham. And says, v'hadarta pnei zakein. You have to give kavod to a zakein, to an old person, or a Talmud Chacham, who's also called a zakein. Now, so the son wants to stand up for his father, right? So the son wants to stand up for the father. But the father, he was a great Talmud Chacham. He was a great tzaddik. And he realized how great the son was, also a big Talmud Chacham and a big tzaddik. So the tati used to get up for the son. The father used to stand up for the son because the son was such a big Talmud Chacham. So when the father comes in the room, the son gets up. And when the son gets in the room, the father gets up. Now, the son, he didn't like that his father has to get up for him. He felt bad. My tati is old. He has to get up for me. I don't feel comfortable that my father should have to get up for me. So what did the son do? He used to never even go through the front door when he comes into the house. Because if he goes into the front door and he comes into the house, over there is the room where the Tati is sitting, and the Tati used to get up. So whenever he came home, he used to climb through the window. He came to his house, he never went through the front door. I guess they didn't have a back door, so he used to always climb through the window.